mentioned the Russian famous novel by Dostoevsky, The Notes from Underground. So actually, the word underground comes from bad translation into English. Uh-huh. And better translation is a space under the floor that is not big enough for a human, but where rodents and bugs live. According to Russian folklore, it is also a place where evil spirits live. So along the whole story, we hear the reflections of main character about suffering and the irrational pleasure of suffering. The narrator mentions that utopian society removes suffering and pain, but man desires both things and needs them to be happy. According to the narrator, removing pain and suffering in society takes away a man's freedom. So could you please expose the falsity of these statements?
Well, I'm not here to do an exposé on Dostoevsky. Because I have so much sympathy for what he says. But again, when one is... There are certain legitimate observations that one can make about the objective world and material existence and the so-called human condition. Without, you know, endorsing wholesale what any particular thinker says, on a certain level, what they're expressing is tenable from a certain perspective. And I think Srila Guru Maharaj allowed for that. Just as when there would be competing narratives of any particular event, even divine, and Guru Maharaj would say, well, they're all, what Krishna's revealing to one, he may not be revealing to another. And as we mentioned in the slok from the Bhagavatam, Krishna entering conscious arena, mala nama shinirni nam nadavada strinam smara murtimam, how, and perhaps 10 different points of view, one Krishna entering the arena and from the 10 different perspectives, from the observers. It's acceptable that there are different ways of seeing and interpreting things. But when it comes to revealed truth, there should be a unified perspective. It does not mean that there is not gradation, because but it's not in the sense of adding one on top of another and then making something. Rather, Guru Maharaj says evolution is gradual expression. Just, where is that talking from? Is it upstairs or? Okay. Said it is gradual expression. That, like the sun. The sun has an actual position, but from someone's perspective, they see twilight. Someone else sees a sunrise. Someone else sees that it's noon. So what I mean to say is, it's not that twilight plus a sunrise plus something else equals a full sun. No, the sun has an actual position. But from a particular perspective, you're seeing twilight or sunrise or the noon sun above. So I'm just trying to be accommodating that from a particular point of view, he's made these observations. And actually, they can be harmonized in Krishna conception. Because in Krishna conception, there's sambhog and viraha, union and separation. And we're even told by the spiritual experts that the pain of separation yields a superior, peculiar sort of happiness greater than that of union. And which is really the subject matter of Chaitanya Charitamritam and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the internal reason for his descent. As expressed, there is Bahye Visajalahoy Bhitore Anandamoy Krishna Premar Adbhuta Charit. Saying the abhut charit, the, you know, wonderfully astonishing characteristic of Krishna Prem is that although externally it appears that one is suffering like the effects of cobra venom, but internally the heart is relishing some peculiar, extraordinary nectarine substance. Right? As Gurudev said, what is the descent of Mahaprabhu? What is his tasting matter? We see repeatedly he is drawn towards feelings of separation. And in the last 12 years of his life, nonstop those feelings. And we see that's why he's actually descended. And if we want to talk about evolution as gradual expression, we see he, in the beginning, he's not even showing that he's a devotee. Right? Svabhaktebhya sudham nijabhajanam mudram upadisham. He's descended for this very reason. What is he doing in the beginning? He's not even showing that he's a devotee. What to speak of the highest devotee. But then, and the devotees are saying, oh, like Gadadhar, oh, Nimai Pandit is charming and perfect in every way. If he was only a devotee of Krishna, his only apparent flaw. But then he's saying, oh, by the grace of you devotees, devotion has come to me. Now I'm appreciating Krishna. And we see during that stage of gradual expression that he's showing varaha, bhav, and so many other things. But as with the full expression of the internal reason for his descent, it's nonstop plunging the depths of Radha-bhav incessantly, particularly for the last 12 years of his life. So in that sense, it's not an accumulation of different types of sentiments or expressions, but rather the substantial thing that was there all along. But in terms of an observable evolution, some gradual expression and coming to that position. And that's the difference, what Gurumar said, of the Hegelian dialectic. And he said, for all the praise he offered him, he said, but he cannot accommodate Leela, right? Which means all of those things are shown out of, only out of the necessity of nourishing divine sentiments. It's not growth in the conventional way that we perceive that. So, then, and when Bhaktivinoda Thakur deals in the Jiva Dharma about suffering and says, you know, suffering in material existence, this is also one of the Lord's pastimes, the material world. And the question is brought up, why do we have to suffer in this way? You know, why aren't we in pastimes that don't have any suffering? Yeah. We'd like to opt out of the pastimes that include suffering and opt in to the pastimes. They're just no suffering whatsoever. And he said, what are those pastimes? Yashoda cried herself blind in separation from Krishna. We see the suffering of Radharani and the Brajagopis, of the cows. So much apparent suffering in Krishna Leela, but then we're told, oh, but this is the open secret. This sort of suffering produces the most peculiar type of ecstatic joy that is more relishable than the happiness of union. So then it would seem to indicate we need to reconceive what is suffering and what is happiness. So, and I believe it was Freud, and might be being alluded to here, not directly, but in principle, the so-called pleasure principle, meaning that we, the way he describes it as, we're, and I think Dostoevsky is alluding to that, that we try to avoid suffering and maximize situations that yield happiness, right? And he's alluding to this sort of thing. So interestingly, when someone asked Freud about his method of treatment, so-called psychotherapy, they said, so is the purpose of psychotherapy to convert neurotic suffering into happiness? And he said, no, it is to convert neurotic suffering into just ordinary suffering. He wasn't, seduced by the mania that you can be happy in this world. And that's to the credit of the Russian people and Russian writers and thinkers. They were never seduced by the notion that you could just be experience undiluted happiness in the material world. I've always expressed skepticism about that. We have Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur on the one hand saying, you know, that the material world, is hellish, right? And we hear this in many different places. Right? Anityam, asukam, lokam, temporary, miserable place, full of varieties of suffering. Then on the other hand, we have Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur saying, and what is the world? Vishvam purna sukhayate. The whole world is full of never-ending ecstatic joy. Right? What world is he talking about? Right? And how do you transition from the world of suffering to that other world? Well, sambandha, abhideya, prayojan, sambandha. In this context, we can take it by a change of perspective, understanding the relationship between the spiritual world and the material world. So we're told the material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Right? And what is the Bhagavatam sloka? Samasrita ye padapalabha pluvam mahat padam punya yasho murare bhavam buddhir vatsa padam parampadam parampadam yad vipadam nashe tesham. Devi yeshu gunamai mama maya durateya. An insurmountable ocean of nescience, ignorance, misconception, right? Insurmountable. Why? Mama maya durate. It's my maya, my deluding potency. Right? So then this illusion, in a sense, has divine backing. And we think some jiva soul is going to somehow figure this all out, right, by their own prowess and overcome this and enter a never-ending whirl of joy. Right? It hasn't happened yet. Right? What were they saying? A fool's errand. And saying, mayam eva ye prapadyante, mayam etam tarantite. But if you surrender to me, then I can release her influence. What is the prayer of Kunti? Maya zavani kachchanam agyad hoksajam abhyayam nalaksha mutadrasha nato natyadzaro yata. She calls it a curtain of Maya. And Krishna's in the background. He can lift that curtain. But in this sloka, where it's comparing the comparing illusion to an oceanic proportions, like when you're drowning in an ocean, surrounded by an ocean, that's sort of insurmountable. But then what does he say? It's very mysterious in the verse of saying, however, that can be reduced to the water that's left in the hoof print of a calf if one takes shelter of you, of your lotus feet. So it's very beautiful and poetic, saying, because it could just say, it will be reduced to a drop. And it says, not even a cow, a calf, that's why it's poetic, saying, vatsa means a calf. So the hoof of a calf, so what is oceanic becomes reduced to a drop. That's what it's saying in principle. So that sounds very wonderful. It's a great ad for crossing over the ocean of nations. But is it realistic? Is that possible? How is it possible? It's possible on a change of perspective that what is insurmountable and oceanic suddenly is nothing, is insignificant. That's how. And we see sometimes, even in this world, when you, like, we have so many cameras and you know, like, what do they call it? Lens distortion means, you know, you can hold up your hand. If it's not a high quality lens, makes your hand look like it's three times the size of your head or something. It's called lens distortion because it's not giving an accurate representation of what is being seen visually. So there's a similar thing at play here. This world, there's a type of lens distortion going on ontologically. We're not seeing things. Why are we miscalculating? Because just like an instrument, a calibration instrument, if you're relying upon it and it's giving false readings, then you will be misled. Right? So they will talk about calibration. So we're talking about ontological calibration as opposed to egocentrism. I think I'm the center of existence and everyone and everything revolves around me. Right? And we now, in the 70s, a man wrote a book called The Culture of Narcissism. Christopher Lash. That was in the 70s. Think about it. He wrote The Culture of Narcissism. So now it's like 47, 8 years later, and the selfie culture, social networking. I don't think Christopher Lash is around. I don't think he could handle it, actually. So this, you know, what is Narcissus? The myth of Narcissus is he falls in love with his own reflection. Right? How he sees, and what is the present day culture? Is everyone falling in love with their own reflection? Right? It's like the myth of Narcissus. You know, and we're it's fine. Go on shooting selfies. We're not here. try and unplug that or unring that bell or unshutter that stop, I mean that click. It's but we have to call it for what it is, egocentrism. And that's humanism by another name. As Solzhenitsyn wrote in the lecture, Harvard commencement lecture, A World Split Apart, that he referred to this as, it didn't start in the internet age, it didn't start in the 70s. Where did he trace it to? And it goes on before that, but he calls it the disastrous deviation of the Enlightenment, because he's representing Western thought. Actually, it goes back to the onset of existence, right? The satanic mania. Would you rather serve in hell or reign in heaven? Excuse me, serve in heaven, reign in hell. But he called it the disastrous deviation of the Enlightenment. Meaning what? Where he said, instead of things being theocentric and God at the center, they replaced God with man and said, man is the center and the measure of all things. That's the if there's an absolute standard, it's man. And everything's value will be judged in relationship to man or human beings. And God was, how do you say, it's a substitute. It's interesting when we hear this, like a sarvapadi vinirmuktam tatparatena nimalam. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Upadi, often rendered as designation or rank, or one of its meanings is substitute. So here it's saying, what is required? To give up all substitutes, substitute conceptions of self, substitutes for divinity. And understand that freedom, there's freedom for the senses, freedom from the senses. Freedom from the senses does not mean to be senseless or the absence of sensuality. It says, Rishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. That's why I've said, actually, the devotees are true pleasure seekers. Right. Not the pleasures of this world, but that does not mean there is not pleasure in the world in which we seek. So it's interesting in this verse that the name Hrishikesh is used. Hrishi means the same. Hrishika Isha means the Lord of the senses. And saying, and your, generally we'll say, so you can use your senses to serve the Lord of the senses. But what does it mean to be the Lord of the senses? It can mean different things, but one thing that it can mean is like the epitome of sensual expression. Like the most beautiful thing, person that can be seen, heard, touched, smelt, all full, tasted, all the full spectral range of sensual possibility, told, this person is the personification of that. Therefore, Hrishikesh. And you possess senses. It doesn't mean, so deny the possibility for sense pleasure, because in this world, for every pleasure you experience, there's the concomitant suffering that accompanies that in the aftermath. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So you think, get me free from this world. And that must mean, in the spiritual world, no senses, no mind, no intelligence. And then you know, merge into the what? a drop, when it put a drop in the ocean, it merges with the totality of the ocean. Really? I don't think that's possible. People, they don't challenge this type of thing. Why should we think that? It's almost, I think it's really not possible. It's not going to spread out that much. So, Hrishikena, Sevanam Bhaktira. And this is very beautiful. So it's saying, Seva, service, your seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, all of these senses can be employed in the service of Hrishikesh. Right? Another name could have been given, but that name is given. So this should be a thrilling proposal, prospect. And that realm, if this is the perverted reflection of that realm, then we could say, just to explore part of it, that then that would mean also, then what we conventionally conceive of as suffering could occupy a desirable position there from a certain point of view. Right? Because everything there is made out of a particular substance. Like we say, lila, these pastimes, just like in a movie, a play, a drama, everything that happens within there is necessary to reach a particular conclusion. So in a sense, it's all good. Just as we see some actors relishing playing the part of a villain. Right? Maybe they get the Academy Award for playing a villain. And they're saying, oh, I was so happy to play that part. Guru Maharaj said there was a play in Bengal, and this great pundit was there, I think, Vidya Sagar Dayal. And he was so absorbed in the performance. And one man was playing a villain. I think he kicked a pregnant woman or something in the scene. And he took off his shoe and threw it at the actor. He was so upset. He thought, this man is so evil. It means he was playing his role very well. In the Shaman Taka Jewel story and later part of the 10th canto, traces the whole history of this jewel and who stole it and how much bad luck that came to them. And at a particular point, a lion had acquired the jewel and then devours this king, Prasena. But Guru Maharaj pointed out, he said, quoting Saraswati Thakur, he said, but in this pastime, right, the lion's devouring the king. He said, the lion is in ecstasy and the king is in ecstasy. Prasena, he's in ecstasy also, being devoured. So there's a world where the devourer and the devoured are both ecstatic? Yes, that's the spiritual world. So rather than focusing our energy here on trying to, the pleasure principle, minimize the suffering, maximize the happiness, or becoming cynical and saying, you know, the whole thing's not worth it. Well, there's some value in that sort of thinking. If it leads one, as Prabhupada said, if one realizes that the material world is a source of perplexity at every moment, and I add to that a never-ending series of humiliations, then it behooves such a person to approach the lotus feet of a spiritual master, a guru, Tasmad Gurum Prapadyeta Jigyasu Shre Uttamam, and inquire about what is ultimately beneficial for one. Not short-term benefit. What is ultimately in one's interest? Well, and that necessarily implies beyond this world and beyond this existence. Do I have some possibility there? Instead of trying to stake my claim here. Right? I am Ozymandias. Look upon my kingdom, ye mighty, in despair. Right? Shelley saying in his poem, the man travels to an ancient land like Egypt and the pharaohs and tells of something very peculiar that he saw. He came upon a monument of giant statue to this king, Ozymandias, but it had been broken. The head was lying in the sand here, the arms over here, like basically the trunk here with an inscription. And it said at the base, I am Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look upon my kingdom, ye mighty, in despair. And he said, when you look around, all you see are desert sand in every direction. No kingdom. Right? And he said, the face in the sand, he said, the sculptor must have known him well because it had this arrogant sneer in his face. I am the mighty Ozymandias. And the poem, the reason it has some value, is it's dealing with one of the central issues of existence, mortality and the futility of trying to establish yourself in this world, happily or otherwise, some compromise between. And what does the Bhagavatam say in the Narada section? What Guru Maharaj refers to as the 10 slokas, Narada's Bhagavatam, 10 slokas to Veda Vyas. And Vyas is extrapolating from there. Well, what? Tasye vahetu prayate to kovido nalabhyate yad brahmatam uparyada. Brahmatam uparyada means try for that thing that you can't get wandering the length and breadth of the universe from lifetime to lifetime, life form to life form. From the highest planets to the lowest and everything in between. And it says, karmically speaking, you have a predetermined amount of happiness and a predetermined amount of suffering on the basis of past actions. And you may create more or less of the same for future reactions. So this is a waste of your time. Right? If you're going to try and maximize the pleasure and minimize the suffering, rather try for that thing that you can't get wandering the length and breadth of the universe. Right? That's not to be found in the objective world, but in the subjective realm, through the subjective agent. Brahmanda, Brahmite, Kona Bhagyawan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Vij. The fortunate souls in their travels, length and breadth of the universe, the world of misconception, come in connection with Krishna's agent, an agent of reality. Or what Saraswati Thakur once referred to as authorized agents of the Absolute. Through this divine agency, the Absolute is descending in relative circumstance. Coming in connection with them, then when Guru Krishna Prasadi, by the mercy of Guru, Krishna sends Guru, and from Guru we get Krishna. Bhakti Lata Beads, the seed of devotion is implanted. That means the seed of dedication is implanted into the heart of one who has accepted the substitute identity of an agent of exploitation. That's the cause of this wandering, exploiting tendency, and trying to establish oneself as an absolute center and expand the circumference of one's exploiting capability. That's material existence in a nutshell. Here, come in connection with this agent, receive the seed, the conceptual seed of devotion or dedication, meaning there's another world beyond this one. If we accept that this is the negative world, then not just neutral, which is above negative, but the positive plane, where you have possibility, prospect, reality potential. Right? Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. Right? And you can begin that service from your present position. Muktir hitvanyata rupam svaropena vivastiti. Narada was chastising Veda Vyas for saying that although it was not your intention, inadvertently, you've given impetus to mundane life, for people remaining bound in this world. And more specifically, why? Because they don't have a sense of the possibility of sensuous expression in the spiritual world. And more particularly, Eros, the erotic principle. That's only in this world. And generally we hear from the spirit, that shall be given up, and then one will enter some kind of genderless condition. That's not Krishna conception. Saying, no, you must describe fully Krishna conception, and particularly the pastimes of Krishna, Radharani, Krishna, Brajagopis, where people can understand that this world being a reflection of that one, that there's full sensuous capability in the spiritual world. Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhura. Think, and by not clearly making people aware of this possibility or this prospect, then they're just helplessly bound. Lust has a stranglehold on the heart. So, mainly what these great writers and thinkers focus on is this world as all in all. And they most frequently identify its shortcomings. And people are sympathetic to that. Why are they the great writers? If this is, there's no great writer who's writing happy books. That's a blanket statement. Unless it's children's literature. Right? There's no adult literature. I mean serious, so-called serious literature. It's all about, you know, the futility of existence and horrible things that happen that can't be reconciled or resolved. Right? A situation that appears to have no consensus of opinion on a solution for the problem at hand, other than the theistic conclusion, which they don't find acceptable. I'm not saying in his case, but they think this world is all in all. They don't want to hear about, they think that's a bait for the people here not to live their lives to the fullest. But what does it mean to live your life to the fullest here? Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, birth, death, old age, disease. these things are inescapable. Vedic literature, revealed truth, descends into this plane to give us a sense of prospect that beyond when the objective world vanishes, the subjective world, the spiritual world, will remain. And we have a part to play in that divine domain. Yes, anything else?
Well, Maharaj, from Russian literature to English literature. There is a saying of George Gordon Byron, "They never fail who die in a great cause." Could you extend this expression of English poet to its extreme through the perspective of Guru Maharaj's teaching?
Yes, well, Guru Maharaj will like that very much, because when applied to devotion, the devotees are sacrificing their lives for the supreme cause. And we've mentioned this on many occasions where it's the time of year where the veterans are being honored. And every country has some holiday like that. And the people of today, they're expressing their gratitude for those who sacrifice their lives for the greater good. Right? It's sometimes referred to as the ultimate sacrifice, right? Because they gave their lives. And so the people are thinking, oh, we have so much gratitude for them because whatever position we're in now, we is thanks to the sacrifice that they made. Right? So it's a natural human tendency to get to honor dedication. And certainly it's honorable. But if that is honorable, right, and that's some local relative cause in a particular country, right, it's not absolute. It's a relative consideration. Then how much honor should be given to those who sacrifice themselves for the ultimate cause? Right. An adir adir, the cause of all causes. Right. If this is noble, sacrificing your life or your family or your community, your village, your province, your country, the world, then how noble and honorable is that life which is sacrificed for thee? Ultimate cause, divinity. So, but to go further, Guru Maharaj will say sometimes how, just giving example, how Christ sacrificed his life, saying, but Nityananda lived, right, for this purpose. And we see in the prayer of Rupa Goswami, praising Lalita Sakhi, saying, Radha Mukunda Parasam Bhava Garma Bindu Nirmanchano Pakarani Krita Deho Laksham Uttunga Sohrida Vishesha Vishat Pragalbam Devim Gunai Sa Lalitam Lalitam Namami. What kind of sacrificing agent is this who Deho Laksham literally means 100,000 bodies, but a lakh, you know, means 100,000. It's one, you have one life, you can sacrifice that for a cause. Here's someone who can multiply themselves 100,000 times for the cause. So, however, taking it the cause is noble, and here we're saying the ultimate cause, what kind of a person is that who multiplies, expands 100,000 times or 1,000,000 times for the cause? How great is that as opposed to sacrificing one life? And as one general said to his soldiers, I can't say the exact words he used, but he said, you're not supposed to die for your country, you're supposed to make the other die for his country. That's what we want from you. Not you'll say, oh, I died for my... No, you're supposed to make him die for his country. So one is self-sacrifice and self-forgetfulness. Guru Maharaj will say, self-forgetfulness is higher than self-sacrifice. Because in self-sacrifice, there's some consciousness of yourself and what you're giving. Whereas in self-forgetfulness, you've so wholly given yourself to the other, you're retaining your identity but have no consciousness of that. You've just totally absorbed in the other. Right? Huh? Like sometimes in this world, you know, you'll hear like mothers say, you know, my happiness is my child's happiness. I'm not going to speak against motherhood. I'm going to say that what they're saying is true. Right? It's an example. Right? So they say, you know, oh, my, I'm just happy seeing them happy, and I believe that. If they can do that or have those feelings, couldn't devotees, what does the highest level devotees have that kind of feeling? So when we hear that the Braja Gopis, that they make themselves look beautiful for Krishna's enjoyment. Right? They wear makeup and mascara and all kinds of, and make themselves look beautiful for Krishna. They dress nicely for Krishna. Everything is Krishna-centric. Right? Can we believe that there are persons who are like that? We do. It's very sweet and real. It's not feigned. So we're told the 10th stage of separation, degrees of separation, the final stage is death. That's when it's reached a level of unbearability. But we're told the devotees don't die. Why? Because it will make Krishna unhappy. So they feel like dying. They're in a death-like sense. But they can't do that. Because it will make Krishna unhappy. So we have to give conventional ways about thinking about these things. And what's the question I'm answering?
Byron's.
Oh, Byron, about noble cause?
Dying for a great cause.
Oh, dying for a great cause. Yeah, so Guru Maharaj is like the Hegelian expression, die to live. There's dying involved, but live. So he's saying, if you want to live in a higher plane, you have to die as you are at present. And when we hear these things, you know, it makes one nervous or like want to study the fine print. See, before you sign up for the Die to Live program. But he's given as usual, Guru Maharaj, you know, he's noted for his analogies, the example. He gives an example within our experience to help us understand it. It's like when you're in school, you know, you're in first grade, second grade, third. So we can say this. To become a fourth grader, you have to finish with being a third grader. Think of it in that way. But he's saying, die to live. So he's saying, if you want to live in this other plane, you have to die as you are. Right? It means to make progress. As he's also given this expression. Progress means elimination and a new acceptance. You eliminate one thing, you accept another. Right? We observe that it's also a symptom of health. Imbibing something vital, eliminating what is no longer essential. That's what it is. Sometimes gurus say, I take my stand on, you know, common sense, spiritual common sense, just common sense. Right? And I like the German word for food, Essen. And I like that because it's like essential, Essen. You imbibe what is like full, that will give you vitality. And then something has to be, the non-essential has to be eliminated. This is a necessary cycle of health. Right? It's not actually optional. Just like he had so many, another example, he said a bicycle. When you're riding a bicycle, you have to keep going forward. Right? We think, well, you can coast for a while, but you have to keep going forward, otherwise the bike goes down. So he's saying, this is, you have to, Krishna consciousness demands that you're in a progressive position. It won't leave you in a stagnant position. You have to go forward. Another example, he said, what? The jet engine, right? It takes the air before it and pushes it behind it. What does that do? It creates propulsion, right? We call it jet propulsion. Same kind of thing. But what does it mean more specifically? Taking the environment, dealing with the environment in such a way as to enable spiritual progress. Oh, so back to that example, Vishwanath said something very, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, interesting. He's always giving some unique insight to these slokas. So it said, what is an insurmountable ocean becomes reduced to the water and the imprint and the hoof of a calf when you surrender the lotus feet of Krishna. And then he said, so normally devotees are, they have some, we can say, healthy fear of the mundane. That's a good thing. Right? Prabhupada would sometimes say, like, you should always remember, Maya is very great and we are very small. And at any moment, she can overwhelm us. Need that sort of humility. But here, Vishwanath says, just to say it in such a charming way, that he's saying, well, you know, calves, we worship the cow. Let us be the little calves. He's saying, so it's like if you bathe a calf, the water from the calf is abhishek. It's like, you know, a holy thing. He's saying, so that water and the hoof print of a calf, what it's telling us is that that insurmountable ocean that we're surrounded by and we've been fearful of and as a threat to our spiritual lives and existence, he's saying, may no longer be seen that way by a progressive devotee, but they're seeing it in a more positive light. In other words, the negative aspect of mundane existence, like the jujitsu, is taking that which is coming at you and converting it into your favor. So Guru Maharaj said the position of the Yamadikari, which is a progressive one, is to convert non-Krishna into Krishna. Right? Misconception and the proper conception. Mm-hmm. Hare Krishna. Dostoevsky and Lord Byron. But one thing we see, I mean, these are the great writers, the great thinkers, that, see, they understand this in principle, and what we're saying is, yes, take that principle and apply it to the ultimate, I mean, to its ultimate expression means the infinite. Yes, so to, you know, die for that most noble cause. But the beauty of that, unlike the soldier who dies here for his country or her country, this is die to live. By sacrificing yourself for this cause, you come out anew and then can sacrifice you again and come out anew. Guru said, when you sacrifice the objective mundane self, the golden self appears. Self-dissipation. Through self-dissipation, the inner swarup or spiritual form is manifest. So, really, it's what they're searching for. So it says in the Bhagavatam, in the nutshell slok, one of them, that anvayad itaratas vyatri kabyam nanyad yat sarasatpuram saying. It's actually in the first sloka, janmadyasya yatonvayad itaratas cha arteshu abhigyaswarat. Here it means directly or indirectly. That's why, really, there is only Krishna. There is no non-Krishna. It's just a deluded misconception. Right? So converting non-Krishna to Krishna means converting misconception and to properly conceive. And we were happy, surprised and happy to hear Guru Maharaj when the devotee arrived at the mat and Navadvipa and said, now that I'm here, what shall be my service? And he said, to acquire the proper angle of vision, right? The right type of seeing. And that's why Prabodhananda can say, from his point of view, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate, the world is, you know, filled with gaur prem, gaur rasa. How wonderful it is. Who's seeing properly? Prabodhananda Saraswati or some other persons, right, who are pointing out flaws of the objective world? This is what he sees from his perspective. And in his great humility, he says, vanchitosmi, vanchitosmi, vanchitosmi na sangshaya. Vishwa Gora Rase Magnam Sparshopi Mamanabhavat. Said, I've been cheated of this, there is no doubt. Gauranga Mahaprabhu came here and he flooded the world with Gaur Prem, Gaur Rasa, Krishna Prem. And I'm so I wasn't touched by a drop of it. Oh. But Guru Maharaj said, how do we understand this? Coming from Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, you think? We use the inversion method for interpretation and really understand that, he said, his capacity, his appetite and capacity is so great that the world is not a drop to him. Because on the one hand, he flooded the world, but I wasn't touched by a drop. That's his humility. Say, everyone else is drowning in a flood, and my misfortune, I wasn't touched by a drop. But we can't believe that for a moment. Guru Maharaj said, no, just his capacity, what is so great for others, is like a drop to such a devotee. That's how we will reverse the sentiment to express our appreciation. But na prema gandasti dharapi mehuro, Mahaprabhu himself, I don't have a scent of the fragrance of Krishna prema, what to speak of a drop of that divine substance. Echoed again in Prabodhananda and everywhere, all the devotees. That means such depth of negative expression betrays their positive achievement. That's how we measure it. Such degree of negative expression means can only be understood as how far, deep, and high they've gone. Hare Krishna.